Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney. You can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programs from the webpage seandelaney.com/podcasts. You can follow the program on Twitter with the handle @InsideEd. Now, I've been asked a few times lately when I'm going to speak about my new book on primary teaching called Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, which was published by Routledge, and it will be featured on an upcoming programme. For now, though, it is available for purchase online and in select bookshops, or you can contact me directly about it. But on this week's programme, I'm delighted to speak to a teaching principal of a primary school in East Galway, and the school has been selected as a changemaker school. Siobhan Keenan Fitzgerald has been teaching for over 24 years in Ireland and in several countries overseas, including Japan and Switzerland. She has been a member of Toastmasters International for many years and has successfully competed in several speech-making and debating contests. She designed and created a structured oral language and presentation programme for young children called Let's Stand. Given Siobhan's interest in teaching public speaking, I began our conversation by asking her what the ingredients of a good speech are.
First of all, structure. A good speech has to have a good, clear structure, a good beginning, middle, end. But I would say even before that, you have to have a very clear message. And before you begin to prepare your speech, to know exactly, in possibly one line, what it is you want to say, and then decide how you're going to say it. And from that, you break it up into your beginning, middle, and ending. So I'd say a clear message, and then with a very good, carefully thought out structure.
And is there anyone in particular that you would admire for their public speaking?
There are lots, but the people who jump out are Ken Robinson. I love Ken Robinson. He's a well-known educationist. I like his relaxed style of delivery. He connects with the audience really well using humour, and he almost makes it seem like he hasn't prepared his presentations, like he's thinking of them off the cuff, that he's speaking off the cuff. And maybe he is to a degree, but I think even the best speeches off the cuff are thought out and are planned in advance to some extent. So Ken Robinson, definitely. I would have to say Barack Obama. I think he speaks extremely well. With public speaking, it's all about connection. And even though, you know, you need good communication skills to be a good public speaker, it's a little bit more than just speaking. It's definitely more communication, because you can speak until the cows come home and people can hear what you're saying. But whether they understand you or whether they connect with you, that's a whole different ballgame. So that's where the real challenge lies, in connecting with people.
And this idea of connection, is that you should feel that this person is speaking directly to me, or is it that you should kind of feel, okay, I could actually see this person as my friend, you know, if I'm in the audience?
I think if you have to connect with the person and maybe feel that they are speaking directly to you, even though they're speaking to the whole audience, and something in what they're saying is connecting to you at some level. And that can be very different for every individual within the audience. I think inherent in that is your authenticity and credibility as a speaker too. If it comes across that you know what you're talking about, that you're talking about something, usually something personal, if you can bring in a personal story, that helps too. It's like a hook. It helps to hook people and bring them in, because they need to be able to connect to something, even if the topic is not particularly one that they're interested in. Stories are a great way. They say that stories are the closest distance between two people. If you have some kind of a personal story to tell that's pretty universal, that will hook people and connect them.
Isn't that the thing, though, to make a personal story universal, or that it doesn't kind of become confessional, or that it doesn't become, say, somebody bragging about something that happened to them or something like that? It's selecting the story and framing it well is tricky.
Exactly, yeah. And how you do that, that's really all down to individual technique. And that's where I find I have a background in Toastmasters. I've been a member of Toastmasters International for the last 12 years. And I think that that's one skill that I've acquired, and I wouldn't say I'm excellent at it yet, but it's certainly developing. And this is the thing with public speaking, you're constantly developing and becoming a better speaker. But it's the whole process of Toastmasters where you're regularly evaluated, that you're caused to reflect on what worked well in your delivery and what didn't. And in that way, you see what some people like is not what other people like. So you have to have kind of a broad range of little techniques and, I suppose, lots of different tools in your toolbox when you're planning your speech and then delivering it as well.
And what's the difference then between debating, public speaking and rhetoric?
I actually debated at school myself, and when I began to discuss with colleagues why we didn't have more public speaking in schools for children, one argument that was often put forward to me was, we have debating, and debating is introduced, it's on the curriculum from about fourth class level. And I started to think about this, and even though I covered debating with my own students, it hit me very clearly. Debating is competitive public speaking, and you really have to have your confidence well built at that stage, and have had a lot of practice to be able to present an argument, to argue it, and then to be able to cross comment or to listen carefully and pick out what you can cross comment on from the other team. And I thought, well, we wouldn't do that with sports. We'd never put children out on a playing field to play a competitive match if we hadn't previously taught them the skills and given them countless opportunities to practice. And that's where I think a public speaking program is important, because to teach them the skills, to build their confidence before you would put them forward for debating. Debating is only one genre of public speaking. There are many, and so far, you know, that seems to be the only reference to it that I can come across on the curriculum in a structured way.
I know that you debated in college, and you also mentioned that you were involved in Toastmasters. How did your interest in public speaking come about?
It started in secondary school, and it was mainly, I think, because my siblings were involved in the debating team in secondary school. So I think it was naturally assumed when I started secondary school, the teachers thought, oh, could she be a good debater? But I wouldn't say that I was really taught the skills. It was really just put her on the team and away you go. I'm actually a very shy person. I would have been very shy all the way through primary school into secondary school. But then when I started to get feedback and positive feedback from it, and I began to think, actually, this is something that I can do. It's not that hard. I can work at it and I can become better at it, and I'm getting a lot of attention for it. Yeah, this could be something. Now, I have to say that the sort of debating that we did in our secondary school, it wasn't really based on research. It was all about knocking the other team down, coming up with a good argument just to knock them down, which, you know, was very interesting, because then when I went to college, I actually auditioned for the St. Pat's debating team. And I got a rude awakening, because for the audition, the other students who were auditioning, they had so many facts and they had really done their research on the actual topics, whereas I was going in with a more casual, sarcastic kind of an approach where I was just picking their arguments apart. Whether there was any truth in it or not, it didn't matter, but I had to pretend like there was. I made the team, which says something for how well I did that, I suppose. But the rest of the team were made up of the students who knew their facts. So I think we were a good team. Perhaps I had a certain ability with storytelling and my style of speaking. I was always very interested in recitations and poems. And I love language. I love words. I love trying to put words together, make alliterations, onomatopoeic words, all of that. So I love language, and I think that feeds into being a good speaker, because that's a tool that I know I can use very carefully and craftily to connect with people. And I've been told that sometimes through Toastmasters, one common thing that we would often do is use groups of three, where we might have three adjectives beginning with the same letter. It's an alliteration, but it really adds power and impact to the description of something that you're going to talk about. And this is something that, you know, the audience mightn't always be aware of, but it's one of those tools, and it's one of those small little techniques that does help connect with the audience because it makes something memorable or it stands out, or they might say, "Oh, I would never have described it like that before. Why does that sound so nice?" And the audience may not think this is actually something that the speaker has put a lot of time and effort into planning, and that's the effect that they're planning for.
You then left college and you became a teacher. So when did you begin to bring public speaking into your teaching?
Well, actually, it's interesting because almost immediately after college, I went to Japan. And that was one of the first places I began to really see how, you know, language, it's all about communication and being able to speak. Because when I went to Japan, I didn't have any of their language. And they were shy about using what language they had in English. But I remember one, just an anecdote, one particular occasion that highlighted the importance of public speaking to me. There were six other teachers from English-speaking countries in the same office as me, and then there were maybe 200 Japanese people. It was an education office. And my boss asked us, could somebody deliver a speech in Japanese to a group of school tea ladies? I was thinking, that's something I'd love to do, except I don't speak Japanese. And as it happened, all of the other foreigners who had been there 2 or 3 years longer than me and did speak Japanese, they were going home for the holidays. So I thought, I can't let the side down. So I thought, I'll do it. I said I'd do it before I realised what was involved. And so then once I said I'd do it, we had to think, how can I do this?
How long were you in Japan at this stage?
I was 6 months. 6 months in Japan, very little Japanese, hello, goodbye, nothing major. But I really knew that I could make a speech. I just didn't have the language. Small problem. But, you know, I sign language, a few other things up my sleeve. So I discussed it with my boss and I said, I could write it out in English if you could translate it into Japanese. And then if you write it in Romaji, which is the type of alphabet that I could read, and maybe we could just block it off phonetically. And then if we could get one of the Japanese ladies in the audience to record it onto a tape, and I listen to it and I learn it off by heart. So that's what we did. We learned the whole thing off by heart. I had a script in front of me, but with Romaji, but it, for all intents and purposes, it looked like double Dutch. But I had listened to her saying the speech onto a tape, and when you had to stop, when you had to go up, when you had to come down. And I also contacted the Irish Embassy and asked them to send me on plenty of pictures and posters and just to distract from everything else. So I delivered it and I just told my boss on the day, I said, just one thing, just tell them I can't take any questions after unless they're in English. But the funny part of it was afterwards, I managed to do a presentation of over almost a half an hour with my brochures from the Irish Embassy and everything else. But one of the first comments from the dinner ladies was, wow, you speak such good Japanese for somebody who's only here for 6 months. But would you believe it, to this day, I remember a lot of it still. And that's over 20 years ago. Because it was such, I suppose, a monumental task that I undertook. But anyway, it worked out fine in the end. But that kind of showed me the importance of public speaking. And what that topic was at the time was just life as a foreigner in Japan. That's what they wanted to hear about. So that's what I spoke about, I think.
Okay. When you came back to Ireland then, is that when you actually started teaching public speaking to children?
Well, no, it's only really in recent years that I've started to explicitly teach public speaking. I've always incorporated a little bit of debating. It was always more debating because I never really stood back and seriously considered the importance of public speaking until I was maybe a few years into Toastmasters. And it was while I was at Toastmasters and when I'd look at professionals from various different backgrounds, extremely intelligent, with fantastic careers coming to Toastmasters to try and get practice and expertise in public speaking and presenting, I thought, why aren't we doing this at school? What's wrong? Why are so many adults not confident enough to stand up and speak in public? And I began to question myself, really, is it something that we could try at school? So I took a lot of the ideas that we were using in Toastmasters and began to apply them then in the classroom, casually at first, just to see if they would work. And I saw quickly...
What kind of ideas were they?
For example, in Toastmasters, the very first speech you would be required to do is an icebreaker, where you would introduce yourself. Now, there's nothing that children like better than to talk about themselves. So just taking that idea as a first speech, but also the evaluation side of it, because I thought, okay, obviously, in terms of classroom management, if you're going to have one child stand up and speak, you're going to have clear rules in place to have respectful listening and also to have the students listening with a purpose. So I thought this is really where evaluation comes in, and it's peer evaluation. Then afterwards, it could be self-evaluation. So that's a Toastmaster idea, really. But I thought even though one student is standing to speak, it would get all students active by actively listening and then having to actively evaluate following it. Also, what I loved about Toastmasters was every project that you do, every role that you take at a meeting is timed. So you have to get your message across in a certain amount of time. And I know within schools, you know, over the years, we would, at the infant levels, we would have done a lot of show and tell or stand up and tell me your news for the day. And what I would have observed in my own teaching is that some students were always quite able and other students might have been quite reluctant for a while. I might stand up and say the minimum, and then others would stand up and it'd be hard to get them to sit down. So I thought, yeah, well, maybe that's something that needs a little bit of structure to make sure that we reach more students and give more students the opportunity. So that's what I began to do as well, was time the presentations and to start at 1 minute, because I think 1 minute sounds very manageable to almost everybody. Although as an adult, when you stand up there, it's longer than you think. But as a child, 1 minute, they think, yeah, I could do that, no problem. But then just to make them aware that after 1 minute, your message is losing impact, so you need to start sitting down as quickly as possible. So there's some of the ideas that I would have got from Toastmasters.
And one of the things you mentioned there was the idea of respectful listening. How do you get that, or how do you achieve that in a primary school classroom where the children can be as young as 4 or 5, or they can be as old as 12, 13?
Well, I like to consider the multisensory approach. What I would say to the students is, okay, what does good listening look like? So you could do a short lesson on this first, and you, of course, you would have visual aids. What does good listening look like? Okay, so you'd sit comfortably first. I'm not so regimental as it has to be 2 feet on the ground, but it should be sitting comfortably. Here you have them considering the idea then of body language, showing respect to the speaker. And then what I always say is, now you take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. We'll start with the ears because it's listening. Open your ears, and then open your eyes, open your mind, and then open your heart. I remember one day one student said, how do you open your heart? And I said, well, you take a deep breath in through your nose, and you feel your heart opening. Of course, it wasn't the heart, it was the lungs, but the students were saying, yeah. So that's the heart opening to receive the message. So I think that just multisensory idea, it's getting it across to them at a young age without saying it directly, that there's more to listening than just opening your ears. It's connecting as well.
I'm imagining that somebody might be listening to this and they're saying, you know, everything Siobhan says is making perfect sense, but really what she's describing is the oral language program in the primary school. How do you see what you're doing in public speaking and its relationship with the oral language part of the English or Irish curriculum?
Well, I see it as a really unique, structured, clear way to be able to achieve the learning outcomes of the oral language element of the new language curriculum. The oral language element, the learning outcomes of that are communicating, understanding, and using and exploring the language. So if you imagine in your mind's eye public speaking, of course that's communicating. That's communicating in the sense of getting your message across, exploring and playing around with different means of getting your message across in the most effective way, using voice, using body language, using hand gestures, using all of those tools. Then if you think about understanding, well, you have to truly understand the topic to be able to get up and speak about it, but also you have the people in the other students in the audience, they're gaining from listening to you. And then the whole area of using it and exploring. Well, of course they're using the language. The actual approach that I use in the program that I've designed, it's similar to First Steps in that it's 4 steps really. It begins with modelling, where the teacher models the language and the presentation that they want to give. All the better if it's not perfect, because the students are evaluating it, and it's better to be able to say, well, that didn't work well, or how could I have done that better? What would have made that more effective? And modelling, and then sharing, where there'll be a brainstorm maybe of ideas to try and get as much information as possible. And here we're thinking about building up the vocabulary bank as well, so that children have a big bank to choose from. And then there's the guiding, So where the children may be in smaller groups, and that's where a lot of the conversation and pair work or small group work would be taking place. And then the final stage then is applying. And when a child stands up to speak to an audience, there's hardly a better way of seeing if they're able to apply what they've learned, because you see it in an instant.
And those four steps that you've mentioned there, modelling, sharing, guiding and applying, they're part of the Let's Stand programme that you've developed, is that right?
That's right. But that would be similar to the First Steps programmes for reading and writing, because with the Let's Stand programme, what I've been very mindful to do is I want to make this programme as easy as possible to use within the classroom, because I do think public speaking is such an important skill that children will need as they go further, and better that they be introduced to it at a young age.
Do you get the children to write out their speeches before they deliver them?
You see, this is where differentiation really comes in. Some people need to write out speeches. I need to write out my speech. I, as a speaker, I feel more prepared if I have written out my speech word for word. I mightn't be able to deliver it word for word, and I might use my notes a little bit, I might not use them at all, but I don't feel fully prepared if I haven't written out my speech beforehand. However, I know a lot of people who don't learn in the same way as I do, who would just be able to visualise. I know a friend of mine tells me that he visualises a clock, and he puts, in his mind's eye, he puts his first point at 12, his next point at 3, the different quarters, his next point at 6, and his next point at 9. That's when he's wrapping it all up. So with Let's Stand, it allows for all different types of learners. Other people like to listen, might record themselves doing a part, listen to it. So it could really be applied to the different styles of learning, the auditory, the visual, the kinesthetic. But I think the important thing is to be aware of challenging the children all the time, and not maybe to allow them to stay in their comfort zone. Because some children are obviously much better speakers, much more capable speakers in some ways than others. That doesn't mean that's always going to be the case, because they might be the children that sit back and think, okay, I have it now. But for the teacher to be mindful of, where can I bring that child to next? So with the evaluation, every child needs to be given some way that they can improve on what they've just come up with. Now, with Let's Stand, I only bring a recommendation in at the third class level, because up until then, I try to keep the evaluation all positive. And this as well feeds a little bit into positive psychology, where we have to focus in on what is that speaker doing well. You know, even if it's just that they're standing up and speaking out, that's an achievement. So we need to feed that back to them, because we need to build on what we're doing good. And then it's at the third class level, once the confidence has been built and the foundation laid, now we can give a recommendation. Well, how can you make that even better?
And would you ever have children, say, reading out a speech, for example?
Absolutely. And, you know, I would encourage in the early stages for the child to be allowed to do what they feel comfortable with, whether it's reading, whether it's just saying a few short points, whatever they feel comfortable with. But just be mindful that we're starting where the child is at and then building on that. One very simple template that it just came to me all of a sudden while I was designing the programme with regard to structure is the palm of our hand. And I start with this with every student. And at junior infants, they have it. I say, this is your speech, the palm of your hand. Look, that's your speech. That's Barack Obama's speech. That's Ken Robinson's speech. The palm of our hand, what we have is the thumb, is the beginning. The three fingers here is the middle, and the little finger is the end. If you know what your beginning is, and then you think, okay, I just need three good points. They could be just the bones of points. And then once you've got this one finished, you know I'm on to my ending. And I think that really simplifies it. So you might have one child who could stand up and just say one thing for the beginning and three bare points for middle and then an ending. And that could take 30 seconds. But if that's where they're at, that's fine. But maybe for the next speech, they could have two sentences for each of the middle points. So it would just give the teacher an idea of how she could bring them on a little bit, step by step. But I think it's such a simple, easy template. One of the junior teachers in our own school had said that one very positive knock-on effect that was completely unanticipated of using the hand as a guide we call it the handy guide, was that when the senior infant students were asked to write about themselves, having previously presented about themselves, prior to having tried the Let's Stand program, she would have often had students write 2 sentences, 3 sentences. That was quite good. And then they'd say, well, I'm finished. Whereas after the Let's Stand program, after having been introduced to the handy guide, she would see them while they were sitting at their seats, actually look at their hands as if identifying, okay, where am I now? Am I at the beginning? Am I okay? Or even sometimes...
So the public speaking was transferring to their writing.
Absolutely. Ah. The structure, the tools that they were using in public speaking, they were considering. What I've done in the program as well is made explicit links between the public speaking program and the writing genres in the curriculum and also the reading genres. I suppose it just hit me out of the blue how in my own early days of teaching, I think I neglected or didn't focus as much on oral language as I could have and should have, because I was more in a hurry to get the writing done, get the reading done. And then it's only in recent years, and since I've had my own children too, I've begun to realise, hang on, but this is where it all starts. It starts with speaking. And having done more research on reading, I was doing the reading recovery course this year, and I began to think, well, it was highlighted a few times that it's very difficult, impossible for children to read words that have not previously been in their, either in their vocabulary or their life experience. It's much easier for them to attack a word that they have had some connection with. So I was thinking, if through a public speaking program or an oral language program, we could introduce that word into their vocabulary. So at least it has to go in to come out. And then by the time they approach that in reading or attempt it in writing, it's there. They'll have it. And as part of the Let's Stand program, I have a section within the books where the students can record the new vocabulary that they've acquired. So the teacher can be a part of that and realise, you know, when she knows this is a new word for that student, maybe not for this student, but for that student. So we'll build up the bank there. So we have lovely words and beautiful phrases that I heard, because it goes in first, and then a section for beautiful words and lovely phrases that I've used. So they hear it and they're challenged to use it. And then that will make reading that vocabulary much easier when the time comes for that.
And that was Siobhan Keenan Fitzgerald talking about the importance of building a rich vocabulary with children. The name of the programme she developed to promote public speaking in primary schools is Let's Stand. And LETS is an acronym for Listen, Evaluate, Talk. I'll bring you the next part of my interview with Siobhan on next week's programme. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with comments or suggestions, please write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can find links to over 260 previous programmes at seandelaney.com. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.